You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
From our studio to yours, this is Various Artists.
Aia he mari e, tēnā koutou katoa, ko mea toka ingoa.
Ko Sophia toku ingoa, no mai haere mai ki Various Artists mō tēnei wiki. Kia ora mea, how are you today?
I'm wonderful, how are you, Miss Ling?
I'm good, I'm pleased to be here.
Yeah, me too, I'm so glad the rain has stopped.
Thank God.
Thank God, the sun's coming out a little bit, I think.
Yeah, vibe is high. Vibe is high. And we're going to keep the good vibes rolling on the show. What have we got?
Yeah, I caught up with artist Jamie R.H. about her current show on at Window Gallery, E Runga o Ngā Puke, Travels Over Feelings. So, what have you got?
I had a kōrero with director and curator A.D. Scherning about Bill Hammond serenading Imagine Worlds currently on at Te Uru Waitakere Contemporary Gallery.
He aha o whakaro. Would love to hear your thoughts on these pieces. So, tuku patuhi mai. You can text us on 5395 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5
So after the show, kaua e ware ware e ahe ana koutou te whakarongo ki ene kōrero anō hei pakihere rokiroki maronga i te pai tukutuku o irirangi poho me haere ki 95BFM irakati.com. You can catch all of these chats and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com.
Various artists, so you can go to the opening for more than just the snacks.
Jamie R.H. is a Te Whanganui Atara Wellington-based artist and curator, primarily working within spaces of language to produce site-specific artworks that both draw from and speak to her familial histories within Te Matua Maui, Hawke's Bay. Her current exhibition, E Runga o Ngā Puke, Travels Over Feeling, showcases a durational language-based artwork presented through a wall-mounted LED sign, displaying a stunning presentation of language in an act of constant movement. An unfolding of text that does not seek closure but instead seeks to withhold it, dazzling viewers with small glimpses of language that flow into fragmented rivers of stories. The LED sign embodying this role as an actor of sorts, in a state of a continuous performance of language, time, and movement. I caught up with Jamie about the show and overall practice. Here it is now.
Kia ora, my name is Jamie R.H. I am a artist and facilitator based in Te Whanganui Atara, Wellington. So I focus mostly on language-based artworks that are typically site-specific, but they also tend to encompass a lot of familial histories relating to where I'm from, Te Matua Maui, Hawke's Bay.
Wonderful. And I would like to start this conversation by speaking to the kind of beginnings of your current show on At Window Gallery, E Runga o Ngā Puke, Travels Over Feeling, which showcases a durational language-based work presented through a wall-mounted LED. How did this specific project gain its initial momentum? Did it kind of come off the back of another project or find its footing with something new?
Definitely is part of a continuous series of projects that I've been working on for the past couple of years. The use of LED signs in gallery spaces and public spaces is something I've been working on since 2022. I tend to return at least to LED signs as a base form of using written language in my practice, mostly because of the fact that they are innately designed for these very short duration kind of information being passed very quickly. But I like to try and push the sign itself to its absolute limits in trying to get longer form information and language through those signs. The focus of the sign's work itself, the performance of the sign, is, I would say, a conclusion of about a years long research-based project around stories from Northern Hawke's Bay in relation to waterways and how riverways throughout where I'm from are changing quite dramatically due to climate change, but also already changed structures from post-colonization. I find that the the river is also a really fantastic metaphor in terms of how emotions can erupt or be swept away. I find it's a really fertile place to kind of explore themes of interconnectivity and travel.
Wonderful. So you've been, this is kind of building up a vocabulary of you working with these LED signage. You've already kind of briefly talked about it, these LED signage, kind of they're more like typical applications in kind of everyday life, but like a bit more in-depthly, what interests you into kind of the LEDs, like inherent material qualities, like what kind of was like, oh, like I really want to work with this in relation to my art practice?
I really like how LEDs, the longer you look at them, they almost burn your eyes.
They're
a very hostile agent to be transmitting information. I quite like that. I'm attracted to how the longer you want to stay there and try and capture all the information that these works are putting out, the more you become aware of your own body and how your eyes start to hurt, your sight gets a bit blurry. It's I'm quite enamored by works that are a little bit aggressive or passive aggressive to the audience. I like to imagine, even though I'm writing the works and putting them into the sign, I like to imagine the sign as an actor that's reading my script, and that oftentimes LED signs are quite simple technology and that they tend to disintegrate a bit or break down often. And so there are periods of times where I'll be having the sign recite long passages of text and things will glitch out. I like to kind of interpret them as the sign as its own agent acting out against what it's been told to do. I see the sign, especially the LED sign, as a really at times hostile and difficult agent to work with, but the nature of its design means you want to look at it. It's attention grabbing. And so to try and utilize those aspects to then turn it on its head and make it very difficult to look at for long readings, so to speak, is something I'm quite fascinated by.
Yeah, and because signage is normally, in our everyday life, walking past shops and advertising meant for quite like that, that walker kind of walking through the street. But the text that you use within your work, I wanted to delve a bit more into the text itself. Can you speak a bit to the process of crafting these moments of language within the piece? Are you writing them as these like whole bodies of text with the fragmentation in mind?
I would say the fragmentation happens, without me meaning, fragmentation is something that I don't aim for, but I think the fact that I would say I'm not a trained writer is something that kind of happens out of perhaps an inexperience with writing as a long form. I would say that I have used specifically in Irunga o Napuke a very vignette style way of building a narrative. I was quite interested in building a narrative that doesn't have an obvious arc to it. It's something that chops and changes quite quickly. I would say it's also very much influenced by the way that I research, which is very chaotic. I would be collecting phrases or portions of waiata or motiatia whilst researching a lot around the rivers that are kind of the narrative base for the work. And these would kind of be interjecting the English portions of the work. And I found that to kind of be almost like the direct voice of the river, which the English portions are trying to write about or pin down. I found that was a theme throughout the writing itself that emerged without me meaning it for it to, but definitely referenced a lot of the historic relationships that people have had with waterways and Hawke's Bay and throughout New Zealand. So there was definitely a lot of vignette style, which came from referencing writing from the past year, writing from years ago, whilst visiting the sites that I'd be writing and researching. So it was this structure temporally, which would always relate to place, but was spanning out multiple timelines. That would be not just in a temporal sense, but also in how these landscapes have been experienced. So then there was the additional aspects of understanding the river through visiting the rivers, but then also going through archives relating to the rivers, going through Waitangi Tribunal claim reports of the rivers. So there's these layerings of understanding the waterways and how the waterway itself becomes this thing that's not just water.
Beautiful. And with this continuous motion of language within the piece, what do you feel as though the motion and unfolding of the text does to the text itself, as well as how this display of text might shift a viewer's perception of how we might encounter or understand language?
I think the fact that the placement of the sign in what is essentially a foyer where people are just walking past, I find that really quite fascinating, and it was a big reason why I really wanted to put this kind of work in Window Gallery. I think on instinct, a lot of people want to wait out the loop, the scroll of the text, to try and seek some kind of closure from the work itself. But the physical pain of staring at a, you know, an LED screen up close whilst it's scrolling for about 10 minutes or so in one full loop, it withholds closure. Mm-hmm. So the structure of it, of the writing itself, is also structured to be loop-based. It chops and changes. So it's it resists one singular interpretation, which I think you can kind of instinctively want from a written work. But the fact that most people realistically will encounter the work while crossing through that foyer, through that space, not stopping to stay. To me, the glances of a handful of words or a phrase of a waiata is kind of the, in my opinion, the ideal experience of it. I would like people to, especially if they're students at the university there, pass through and see these, you know, fragments of the work, and slowly through their own interpretation or their own interaction, which is out of loop with the work itself, slowly begin to have their own amalgamation of what the meanings or, you know, impressions of the work are.
Yeah, it's such a beautiful location. It's I kind of think of Window Gallery, it's in this kind of threshold space between like that outside and then this kind of large housing of language and text, which I think works in so lovely with your work, and also has this really inherent quality of those people passing through it constantly and each encountering your piece at those little moments and having those different interactions compared to everyone else. There's not like one singular mode of encountering the piece, which I think is really lovely.
Thank you. Yeah, I really love the space. I kind of had a really buzzy moment when we were installing, and I kept looking across the foyer to the huge work by Ayesha Green, which I was really lucky to see in its original exhibition in Hastings City Art Gallery when I was back home, which is a depiction of students at the Hukarere Girls College, which was a work, an entire exhibition about the history of that Māori girls' school, which is based by Esk Valley River, which is part of the waterway that I was researching for a year. as me and Ayesha Greener are both Natukahununu.
So it felt
like a really full circle moment to have the work kind of across from a fantastic artist who's been making beautiful art about stories that originate from Te Matua Māori as well. And yeah, I think it's really beautiful that the two of them are facing each other. Yeah. I like to imagine that they're having a conversation. Yeah, it was really amazing to have that opportunity to have those two works in tandem with each other.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So many dialogues taking place in that space between you and Aisha's work and the students. Such a lovely liminal space. And I also wanted to talk about the inclusion of imagery within your piece, imagery being the horse in motion that seems to be running through the language but can't quite keep up. The language seems to be moving beyond the horse in some way. Do you want to speak a little bit to the inclusion of the horse within the piece?
Absolutely. So the horse has been a frequent visitor of my LED-based installations for the past couple of years. I think you hit the nail on the head around the tension of the character of the horse versus the language that it is either racing or escaping or in competition with, perhaps. I think on a surface level, I think it creates a great rhythmic quality to experiencing the work, which I quite enjoy. But then I had quite a large portion of original drafts of Eronga Unapuke, which talked about the role of horses in land cultivation, but also the role of horses in decolonial efforts, but it was something that didn't quite make the final cut, I suppose. I wanted to keep the text very tightly bound to rivers in this particular work, but the work itself emerged beside the character of horses. And I think horses, obviously in poetics, as a classic metaphor around freedom and desire. And I guess I couldn't resist having something that kind of captured those themes kind of thrumming through the whole work. I find that people often do ask me about the horse, and I never really have a succinct answer for it. It's something that I think is a habitual inclusion. It's almost like a talisman for me whenever I'm using my own writing, especially. I think it helps me feel a bit braver in sharing my work, as even though I've exhibited with LED signs so much now, you always feel a little bit nervous. But there's something about having a companion in the in the wild horse, which I think inspires me a bit to, just get the words out there.
Yeah. Oh, nice. A little guiding horse.
Yeah.
And lastly, what are your overall hopes for viewers encountering your show?
I would say I hope viewers are ambiently annoyed at having to wait to read a full sentence. I hope they are entertained by the little horse prancing around. I hope that they are moved to feel something in a new way, as any artist would hope for. And I also hope that anyone who also has whakapapa to the rivers that have been such an inspiration for me for the past year also, see those rivers too. Or perhaps if they are whakapapa to any river throughout the motu, they feel the same kind of mana and pride in knowing those rivers and loving those rivers.
That was Jamie R.H. speaking to me about her current exhibition on at Window Gallery, E Runga o Ngā Puke, Travels Over Feeling, which is on until the 11th of Feb, so be sure to go check that out.
What's it all for?
Various artists.
We've now got some songs for you. We'll be right back, so stick around.
This is by
Garth, Garth, where's your hat? No hat, no play.
I don't have one, sir.
Then go on and pick a hat from Lost Property.
Oh, sir, those hats all have nits.
It's nits or melanoma, Garth.
It's a no hat, no play summer, so it's lucky 95BFM have you sorted with sweet merch for your noggins. Choose from four designs, two classic cap designs, one cord design, and a bucket hat. Pre-order yours now from twotonesmerch.co.nz.
All right, you four Muppets, listen up. I finally pinpointed 95BFM's weak spot, Friday night, 7 till 9pm. The staff have all gone to watch Rick Breeze play water polo, so that's when we're going to strike. Phil, you're cracking a safe. Renee, you're disabling the alarm. Pat Fife, you load this BFM CD library into this sack. And Professor, you're driving the getaway van. Kushti. They're never going to see this coming.
Gang of Four, every Friday night from 7 till 9pm, with a revolving cast of bona fide BFM legends, Renee, Pat, Phil and the Professor are putting the B into TBIF. Gang of Four, thanks to Verona, the heart of Karangahape Road.
West Coast, chopping.
Regan, wake up.
East Coast.
Honey, you're having those strange nightmares. Oh, no, no, it's not.
One out of ten on both.
Oh, God! Father Damien, it's happening again!
Looking for tubular swells? It's the 95BFM Surf Report. Is the West Coast gnarly? Is the East Coast bogus? Do people even still use these words? Find out every morning on breakfast and every afternoon on drive. The Totally Radical Surf Report, proudly brought to you by the dudes and dudettes at Progear.
Oh, that's a good art.
Bill Hammond Serenading Imagine Worlds is a survey exhibition currently on view at Te Uru Waitakere Contemporary Gallery. Hammond, born in 1947, was a Littleton-based artist with a career spanning over four decades and is widely recognised as one of the most influential and original painters in Aotearoa. Although best known for his bird-human hybrid paintings, which largely defined his practice from the 1990s onwards, Serenading Imagine Worlds surveys and traces the preceding chapters of his practice, inviting the viewer to engage with a panoramic sweep of his career. From his handcrafted wooden works, prints, to his edgier paintings of the 1980s exploring popular culture, music and politics, and the otherworldliness of his Auckland Islands-inspired works, the show reveals the essence of who Hammond was, an artist who experimented, challenged, and was attuned to the possibility of reinvention. I had a kōrero with director at Te Uru, A.D. Scherning, about Hammond and Serenading Imagine Worlds.
Bill was born in 1947. He's really associated with Christchurch. He lived in Littleton and went to Ilam. He didn't graduate, but he did start art school. He's exhibited extensively in Christchurch and was shown with the Judith Griffith Gallery down there and, obviously McLeavy Gallery. Peter McLeavy was a big part of his trajectory, as was Peter Webb up in Auckland. But he's one of those artists, a bit like McCann, that's a sort of mainstay in our art history and a really important painter who has a style that is uniquely New Zealand, I suppose.
You curated this show with Hohua Thompson, and I guess I'd love to hear a little bit about your personal relationship with Hammond's work as well. When did you first come across his work and what struck you about it?
Gosh, yeah, I don't know when my first interaction with his work would have been, but I did become very familiar with his work when I was working at Webb's Auction House and having to, appraise several of his works and get quite familiar with them. I got to see a real breadth of his practice that you don't see outside of that very unique perspective. And that's where I did encounter his early wooden carvings and wooden works and, his drawings or etchings and things that aren't, the sort of post-Auckland Island visit bird creature paintings that he's so well known for. These sort of lesser known works to me were really fascinating, and I think that was a big part of of my drive to show people a bigger breadth of what he does or did, sorry, as an artist.
Mm, yeah, totally. As you say, it's this show, Serenading Imagine Worlds, is quite amazing as it is really taking the viewer back to less familiar works and sides of his practice and surveying his career and practice, capturing four distinct phases of his practice across his lifetime. Are you able to kind of speak to the scope of the exhibition and these distinct genres within his overall practice?
Yes. So I wouldn't say it's a full survey in a way. It's a pretty hard thing to do with any artist to show the full extent of their career. So by breaking it into these four sort of parts, you know, I wanted to show the wooden works, and you know, Hoho and I sourced those, which was fun, and you know, to show the early drawings and to show that the real vibrancy of his 1980s paintings that were sort of pre that shift to the anthropomorphic bird paintings that he's known for. So that was sort of the final chapter and what we've shown in the exhibition. But yeah, I suppose we just focused on those points of difference, but also showing the connections between the different sort of stages in his career, rather than, you know, a full, I mean, you could just survey, you know, a few years of his life, and that would be a very full show as well. But we wanted to show the expanse of it and the different parts, but also those connections.
You mentioned there, these connections between these different phases. And I think what's quite interesting about this exhibition is, although you're seeing Hammond experiment with different styles and tones, his work and artistic voice and vision is still distinctly his and very recognisable. How would you kind of describe this approach to art making that Hammond had and that can be seen across his practice? Was there a subject of interest that defined this distinctive vision of his?
It's a hard thing to speak on behalf of an artist, you know, especially when they're no longer with us. But, you know, as someone working on this exhibition, you can see from the early wooden works, you know, there's a playfulness and experimentation and the sort of imagination that he has, which I think is the thing that is so easily connecting throughout the works. Like in one of the wooden works, you've got this little sort of creature, and then you've got text, which is about dance. You know, it's connected to music and dance and lyrics and things that we see later in his paintings. But the creatures, you know, these bird-headed creatures, people that we see in the post-Auckland Island works are also evident through the early works as well. You've got, in his etchings, you've got these duck-headed, you know, creatures, like a platypus, I think it is. So, yeah, the evidence of his imagination and the way that his mind works is the thing that I think is cohesive throughout, and I suppose that's the same for any artist, that you can see a little bit of who they are throughout their whole career and work, because that's the one thing that never changes, even though their influences might shift and their interests might develop. That's the one static thing.
You've, of course, mentioned, it goes without saying with talking about Hammond's work, these bird-human hybrid paintings, which were such a turning point in his practice and are most recognisable and most famous. I'd love to hear a little bit more, I guess, about what we know about the shift in his practice, though. Do we know how this subject developed? Can you kind of speak to that?
A little bit. So in 1989, he went on a trip to the Auckland Islands with a group of artists, and that had a profound impact on him, I suppose, and resulting in an impact on his work, which is sort of evident in the exhibition when you look at the works from the 1980s, which are there, and then the works from the 1990s. So we kind of wanted to have works that were sort of either side of that shift in his work, so quite close to the time that there was that significant change in his work. Going to the Auckland Islands, I think being in a place that didn't have the level of human interaction that we have here, he saw this place that was run by birds in a way, I suppose, and that sort of imagination of what nature would be like, what Aotearoa would look like had it not encountered humans, I think is where he's gone with that, and you get these amazing creatures. I mean, that's just one of the many layers of his work. There are so many other things that are in them. They're filled with signifiers and, you know, meanings that I don't think any art historian would be able to decipher entirely. There's just so many layers and so much detail in all of his work.
Yeah, you like mentioned beforehand that although it's a survey exhibition, it's also just a snapshot of his practice and career. And I can imagine it is quite a challenge to pull together a cohesive body of work for a historical solo exhibition. Can you tell me a little bit about the process of collecting these works and where these works have been sourced from?
Yeah, absolutely. So I had a lot of help with that. And, you know, Hohua and I worked with external help to make this happen. So the team at Webb's Auction House, they helped me to source some work. They also very generously funded the exhibition, which was amazing. And Art and Object also helped us to source some works. Charles Nino, who's an old colleague of mine from my Webb's days, also gave me some sort of pointers in terms of where those works might be held that we needed to source. Mostly they are from private collections, and we're very grateful to those people to have loaned us their works for, you know, about 3 months and have an empty wall for that period of time. But other works have come from public collections as well.
Well, it's been so great to hear you talk more about the show. I guess for you, what do you kind of think the ongoing legacy of Hammond's work is in Aotearoa, or maybe the significance of having a show like this on at Te Uru?
I suppose the significance of having it here, you know, I mean, I had always had a fascination with Hammond and thought it would be great to show people these other aspects of his practice, but I did discover from being here at Te Uru that he lived in Tiranga for 2 years. So he lived here 1971 and 1972. So for me, that's pretty significant. You know, we do, there's a lot of amazing artists that have spent time in the hills here. So it's nice to have that connection to the time that he spent here, and that's when he started making the wooden works as well. So kind of a cool legacy to connect into that.
Yeah, beautiful. So special to have them back home in some way.
In a way, and also, you know, there were some very, very cool exhibitions that were developed by Christchurch Art Gallery that didn't tour up to Auckland, so it's actually the first time in a really long time that there's been, well, I don't know when the last time there was a significant showing of Hammond's work in Auckland, so that's part of the drive as well, to give people an opportunity to see work that hasn't, you know, aired in Auckland for a long time, or, you know, ever, some of it. Yeah, it's a great opportunity to see the breadth of Hammond's work, so come along and visit us.
That was A.D. Scherning speaking to me about their current exhibition on view at Te Uru Waitakere Contemporary Gallery, Bill Hammond Serenading Imagine Worlds. The show is on until the 22nd of February, so be sure to check it out.
Yes, darling, but is it art?
We'll be right on back to give you your arts guide. But for now, some more tunes. This is Indigo Spark, Pressure in My Chest.
I carried you with me to the mountain of my dreams. Sweet, cold and icy, a landscape of wet trees. And the light is filled with wonder. Huge. I burn through, but there's a pressure in my chest.
here I am.
Should I propose friendship? Flies going crazy, wiggling and flipping. Emporio Armani builder. I see shit everywhere, hustling. Deal making on the train and a call from the Arctic. It's either scientists or people who are mining or dog sledge people. It's either scientists or people who are mining or dog sledge people. Say something. Keep trying. Take this and don't shrunk my things. No shrunking. If you're rich, you look good. That's not news. Steve, for a reason, of course. expensive and opaque and privatised. My shoe organising thing arrived, thank God. I don't want to go on about it, but we're back in business. Just a sweet and natural start.
It's the 95 BFM Art Guide on various artists. It's paintings in that.
This week in the wonderful world of art in Tamaki Makaurau. As mentioned on the show, Bill Hammond's Serenading Imagine Worlds is currently on at Te Uru Waitakere Contemporary Gallery until the 22nd of February.
Also, as mentioned on the show, E Runga o Ngā Puke, Travels Over Feeling by Jamie R.H. is currently on at Window Gallery until the 11th of February.
Elise McDermott's Pop Sediment and Tia Barrett's Pātaka Wā are both on at Room Gallery until the 21st of February.
And A Moment to Hold is currently on at the Arts House Trust at Pa Homestead until the 1st of March. Another short art guide for you this week, but it's all kicking off next week, mm-hmm. I think. So big things coming.
Big things coming,
big
trust.
Big things coming, yes. And if you have something you want on the arts guide, you can email us at arts@95bfm.com.
That was the 95BFM Art Guide.
Ko ira te hōtaka katoa mō tēnei wiki, nei te mihi kia koutou katoa e kōrero mai ki māua mō tēnei rā.
That's all for us on various artists for today. Ngā mihi nui to everyone who spoke with us.
AD Scherning.
And Jamie R.H.
Nei rā, hoki te mihi kia koutou e whakarongo ana. Thanks for tuning in.
And remember, you can listen back to all of today's pieces on 95bfm.com or check out our Instagram at 95bfm various artists for more.
Ka hoki mai mātoa, te rā wiki. Next up is The Land of the Good Groove with Mari. My name is Soph.
I'm Aya.
And that was Various Artists.
We'll catch you next week.
You're listening to 95BFM. Ka kite.
Ka kite.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.